Ricardo.
Welcome everyone to a brand new edition of the Spiff Kicks podcast. I'm Alex, and with me as always are Ben and Steve. Please like and subscribe to this podcast, share it with all your friends, and check out SwiftKickspod.com as well for all the latest news out of the footballing world. Today we have a special guest, Fernando Suarez, who's out in Tokyo working at the Olympics. He's a big fan of the Premier League, and we're going to have a great conversation with him shortly. First, there's plenty to talk about as we look forward to the new season just a few days away now. Man City eyeing up the £200 million duo of Harry Kane and Jack Grealish. Harry Kane hasn't shown up to work for a few days at Tottenham. Lukaku could be on the move to Chelsea for the right price. It's a pretty high price as well. Meanwhile, Newcastle are the only team in the Prem not to have made a signing. What's up with that? First, though, Steve, the Scottish Premiership is underway. And Postecoglou Celtic didn't get off to a hot start, but there is some big news in the transfer market, right?
Yeah, massive developments today, I think. Very promising in terms of Celtic fans, I think. James McCarthy from Crystal Palace, Ireland, Republic of Ireland International, and Joe Hart, the goalkeeper, coming from Tottenham.
That's
James
huge.
McCarthy comes in James McCarthy comes in on a free. I believe Joe Hart was a £1.3 million signing. Both ample amounts of Premier League experience. I think it's a little bit of a gamble with Joe Hart initially, but I mean, we took a gamble with Fraser Forster from I believe Southampton in 2019. That paid off real well. I think that they're hoping that something of the same happens here. James McCarthy, Joe Hart comes in undisputed number one in between the sticks. James McCarthy, I have to imagine also is definitely a starting position as well. Both very promising signs of intent from the club. Good to see from a Celtic fan point of view, especially after, in a matter of what, 5 days, something like that, less than 5 days, we crash out of the Champions League crash out of the Champions League before we get there.
Yeah.
And the first game of the season is comes in a loss to New Boys Hearts of Midlothian, but the show goes on.
Yeah. I mean, what did you make of that loss? I tweeted out on Real Swift Kicks, Postecoglou's sort of post-match, interview with the press. And he did look a little bit down, and he hinted at the idea that at this point in time, he's still sort of throwing out team lineups, and he didn't seem like he had quite figured it out himself yet. And, you can't really blame the guy. He's had only a few couple weeks really to get stuff together. But, at what point does that excuse go out the window? How quickly does that excuse go out the window for you?
I think he's still got a long ways. I think the general consensus too is that this loss is not Postecoglou's fault. This is the board's fault. Mm. They've dealt him just an impossible hand, and he's doing the best that he can with it. I think that Postecoglou hasn't had the backing of the board in terms of signings as much as he's wanted to. I think that's starting to turn around. Obviously, post-match interview was given after Joe Hart and James McCarthy. Whether or not they were his top priority signings, I'm not entirely sure. But the consensus, I mean, like even during the game, I think Celtic had more chances. We had over 70% possession. I know that doesn't win football matches, but they were promising signs. It just didn't go our way that day, away at Hearts. And I do think that with more of Postecoglou's attacking aggressive football and these signings coming in, you have a very experienced keeper in Joe Hart, 74, 75 international caps, something like that. With his international career firmly in his rearview mirror, he can focus 100% on Celtic, maybe even give his career another rebirth. James McCarthy, another proven international with Ireland, also in the Premier League, much Premier League experience. Super promising, super exciting. I'm ready, and I think the fans are ready to see what Postecoglou has to offer. But in terms of what the question that you propose, how long does that excuse go on for? I think it'll take a while for the fans to start turning. I mean, they need to know that it's Postecoglou making poor choices and not the board giving him a bad hand. If he has all the tools that he could possibly imagine at his disposal and he's not managing to make these tools work in his favor, then I think things could turn a little bit. Hopefully we don't get to that part, but that's my opinion.
And also, do you think that this is sort of almost a welcome to Scottish football? You know what I mean? Like a quick learning curve, if you will, for him coming out of
for sure
J League.
And he's brought in a couple I believe at least one Japanese player. I believe another one is on the way, if not already here. My first thoughts go to Shunsuke Nakamura, is if we can have another Nakamura, another club legend like that. But yeah, I'm trying not to like get too hype about it, but it's exciting. I hope that this blend of, you know, what Postecoglou knows from Japan, maybe some Australia, maybe he can get the best out of Tom Rogic. I know he's managed the Australian national team at some point. If he can just take all of these working pieces and incorporate his own brand of football on Celtic Park, I don't see why this season can't be a great one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm really actually, it almost feels like a where are they now? I didn't know that Joe Hart was coming over from Tottenham still. But it'll be interesting to see how he fits into the squad right away. And I think you've got another new signing is a local lad and looks like he's going to be playing for a boyhood club. So that's always just gives him a little bit of extra bit of energy, I think. So that could be a positive going forward.
Last boyhood fan that played was Shane Duffy last season, who came from Brighton on loan. And everyone was super excited about that because Premier League experience. And, you know, he's a Celtic fan, Irish, all these things. And then, I mean, Duffy didn't have the best of seasons last year. I think he was more of a liability than an asset, but that's in the past.
Yep. You guys are looking forward. And also Rangers, just to keep your hopes up a little bit, they did lose as well in their Champions League playoff match as well. So
we'll see I saw how it goes that. For they them. Lost 2-1 to Malmo. They conceded 2 goals in 3 minutes in the second half.
Yep. So not looking too hot for Stevie G. We'll see what happens,
though. Yeah, we'll see what happens with them. I also saw, pardon my pronunciation, but with Celtic crashing out of the Champions League to Midtjylland, the FC Midtjylland of Denmark, I saw that they also, I believe, lost their match today against, I can't quite recall, but you always want to see that the teams that you lose to go on far. That's like my theory, because like then you know that you lost to like the best or very formidable sides. So like when I see that we've crashed now, we've lost to the team that lost their very next game, it's like not the best, but
there we are.
Anyways.
All right, let's move from Scotland all the way over to Tokyo and bring in our guest this episode, Fernando Suarez. He's in Tokyo working at the Olympics. Fernando, great to have you on the show. So first, tell us how the Olympics are and everything that's going on with the COVID protocols. How's that working out?
Well, thank you for having me. This is pretty crazy. It's very, all very professional and very mellow for what we can see from here. Protocols are the same for pretty much everybody. I mean, if you are close to an athlete, you get tested every single day and you go from there. People that are in the back of the house and don't get to deal with athletes much, they get tested not as often, but like every other day. So it's very, I would say it's super professional. Like you get tested super often, and where we are, nothing has happened COVID related. It's all about the athletes and the sport. So I kind of know that.
How far in advance did you have to get there? Because you're stateside based, right? Like where are you from in the States right now?
Right now I'm based in SoCal, California. That's near Santa Cruz, in the Bay Area. So I had to get to Tokyo 2 weeks before I was supposed to start doing anything here. So that was like July 1st, and we started competition around the 23rd, so quite a while.
That's awesome. What'd you do to keep yourself busy in quarantine? Because I saw some of those videos, Fernando. If you guys haven't had the chance, you need to check out Fernando's videos. I think, did you discover TikTok in quarantine? Is that what happened?
I was so bored. This seems like something I could do. I was just like messing around like with videos and stuff, and I knew that I was gonna have to spend 2 weeks in like full lockdown. So I brought my VR headset and I was just playing video games and trying not to go crazy.
That's nuts. What do you do for food in that situation? Like you can have deliveries, I assume, and everything, right?
You can, or they give you bento boxes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Would recommend, would not recommend?
I would recommend not having fish for breakfast.
Noted. Got it.
Yes.
I'd go nuts. I don't know what I'd do with myself.
And TikTok.
It's like prison. And TikTok. Yeah. That's pretty awesome, man. So are you liking it out there? Is the hospitality great? Like, is it kind of weird? Like, have you been to Japan before?
Well, I was here for the test event in 2019. It's way different in the sense that there's so few people out there. Once you're out of quarantine, you're allowed to kind of go outside of your hotel. So we stick close to venue. Like, we try not to disturb the locals. But people are super nice, super, super nice. We had a bunch of volunteers come and help, obviously, for the event. And they are like the nicest people ever.
That's awesome, man.
So at the Olympics, I think at the end, where, so has there been spectators at any of the events for the entirety of the Olympics, or just the tail end they stopped allowing spectators?
So up until, I think, a couple of days before the event started, we were going to have like 50% capacity. And then restrictions went up because cases went up, which, sure, I mean, makes perfect sense. And then it pretty much, they closed down all venues to spectators. Okay. I think there are a couple of sports that have spectators, but it's because they're not in the Tokyo prefecture.
Oh, okay.
And Tokyo is the place that cases have gone up more sharply, I guess.
Sure. Okay.
Have you been able to, you said you were able to sort of get out of the hotel. Have you been able to go to any other events or like check out anything like the football or anything like that?
Oh, no.
It's like a strict no.
Yeah, you're allowed out, let's say, but like, you don't want to burst into any other bubble. Like, our sport has its own bubble. Like, you have your own people that you interact with. And if you go to a different sport, then you're getting into a different bubble. And if something happens, then
you shut both.
It would not be good
down
for anybody.
Right. Yeah. Gotcha.
Which sport were you helping out with?
I'm helping with archery. And I'm staying through the Paralympic Games too. So.
Well, that's awesome.
Oh, dope.
Archery. Who won that one? Was it South Korea won a lot of those medals?
South Korea always wins a lot of medals. They are pretty amazing. Yeah. The mixed team was the first year that we had mixed team in archery and at the Olympics.
Yeah.
It was won by South Korea. The women was won by South Korea, and the men was won by Turkey.
Archery is such like an intense sport, man. Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's not just man versus man, because you do have the element of competing against yourself. You got man versus nature in there as well, because something as much as like, you know, 1 mile an hour change of the wind direction can completely throw you off. And that can happen between shots. And then on top of that, you got man versus self, where you're just sitting there, because it's a game of millimeters at that point, and how little can change that. How what's it like down on the ground for those kinds of events?
Oh, it's crazy, because you have, like you said, like, there are a lot of variables that go on into making the perfect shot. So any wind, it's a problem. And if you don't know how to read it, you might be aiming at the right spot and you just miss completely. Like, these guys and girls are like shooting 70 meters at, like, you pretty much have to hit a CD disc or a Blu-ray or whatever you want to call it. Like, you have to hit that at 70 meters. It's insane.
So you're saying you have to be good to be in the Olympics.
Alexa, translate 70 meters to feet.
It's about 70 yards, Steve.
Thank you.
With that being said, though, so everyone can hit it, right? So, like, is it just dead silent when they go on, or is there a lot of chatter, or does it depend on the people?
It depends on the people. When you have spectators, like, they try to keep their volume down because you have to concentrate super hard. But as the lineup, the shot, and they're preparing and stuff, it can get pretty loud. And especially in team events, you have the one that just went telling the other guys, I aimed here, this happened, be careful with that. So there's a lot of like talking involved.
Yeah.
Because you do want, like, if you're the first one to shoot, you're the first one to see the, like, what happened with the arrow. So then you need to, you need to convey that to your teammates. So if you didn't get it right, they can.
Have you had any interaction with like the athletes? Because I'm always wondering, we were talking about how, you know, there's no real fans in the stands and everything like that. Has there been sort of like a mental, you know, toll taken on them as they go up for these events, you know, that maybe they would, you know, archery is a little bit more of a solo sport, you know, even if it is a team event at points, you know, but has that weighed on them at all? Have you gotten that sense from them?
From talking to them, I felt like they miss the people, especially at the Olympics. Like there are a lot of athletes that have been to several Olympics and they say that having the stands empty just feels like something is off.
Yeah.
I mean, they still put on a hell of a show.
Right.
But it's, they have not been outspoken saying, oh, this is like, they've said it's different. But that's as much as I could get out of them, because I also like, I don't want to be pestering them. Like
right.
I'm a reporter, like peppering with questions.
You're not a groupie.
Yeah. I'd try to help, you know.
It's the, you're doing the recurve bow, right? Like it's not compound bows, it's just recurve.
Right. So at the Olympics right now, it's only recurve bows.
That's wild.
Which that's why it's called the Olympic bow.
Yeah, that makes sense. Had I thought about it, I probably would have tried to slip you $50 to sneeze right as someone goes to take a shot. You know what I mean? And just throw them off. And with no fans in there, it would have echoed perfectly. But no. No, first, so we're glad you're here. So we know each other, right? We go way back. It's longer than I care to admit now. You, me, and Steve all play together at Delta. Good times, if you know, when we look back and ponder. Alex and I grew up together in England. So we like to get people on with kind of, you know, different backgrounds and kind of share where they're at. And one of the questions we like to ask everyone is, what made you fall in love with the beautiful game of football? Like, why soccer? Why is that so special to you?
Well, being from Argentina, football is pretty much everything. But the one of the things that I do love the most about it is there's so many variables. It's not just kicking the ball forward and hoping for the best. Like you have to know, like you have to see the whole field. And that's something that I always admire of people when they just like, they just put their head down and they cross the ball and it's like, your teammate is right there. You know what's going on around you. You know what's going on the pitch. And that's one of the things that I love the most. It's just like knowing what everybody is like and what they can do. Because knowing your teammate is key. It's not just like, well, I'm here. I don't want the ball anymore. Here, you do something.
There's plenty of those guys around. We all know those individuals.
Yeah. What are you... What did you take from like the South American game? Like what's different to you? I mean, especially compared to the US game.
Good question.
It's, we are very scrappy. Like there's no box. It's like, oh, you're playing here.
Yeah.
It's like everything is spontaneous and anything can happen.
Did you grow up playing futsal at all? Because futsal was invented in Argentina.
It was. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was invented at a YMCA in Argentina.
That's mostly like when I wasn't playing club like 11s, we would get together with my friends like twice or three times a week and play futsal.
It's gonna be cool. On one of Ben's future quizzes. He likes to think that he's like a pub quiz master. So he's gonna ask us a good question in like 6 weeks from now, and he's gonna be like, "Where was futsal invented?" And we're not gonna remember.
Steve will get it right.
Argentina.
Alex is like, dude, I wasn't listening to you.
YMCA in Argentina. There
you go. And now you know. That's funny, man. So now your club in Argentina. How did you find them? Who do you support? What is it about that club that made it special?
My dad is a big Boca Juniors fan. So obviously, like I had to be too.
It's in the blood.
I think my first ever jersey was a ratty old, like broken fabric, like blue and gold. And that's the first jersey I ever remember having. And so from there on, it was game over. It was Boca or nothing.
Who is your all-time favorite player from that club? I mean, you got some great ones, right? You got Raquel May. Isn't Walter Samuel was one. Samuel, Maradona, yeah. Of course.
Well, so one of my all-time favorites, his name is McAllister. He was left
Scottish?
He was redheaded, so it's a possibility. But he was from Argentina. But no, he was a left back, and the guy was like my height, like 5'7", and could jump like nobody's business. And he was really good defender. And yeah, I think that he would be my all-time favorite. It's either him, Samuel, or Riquelme. Like, I don't know why, but I usually go for defenders.
Well, you're left back yourself.
Yeah, that was not my position though. I tend to just float whenever whatever is needed.
It's a man of the people, Steve.
Argentina doesn't have positions.
You gotta put them in a box, man. That's not how we're working here.
You just go out there and you do stuff, you know.
So I gotta ask an Argentinian, is Messi the greatest of all time?
I personally don't think so. Ooh. I know that that's going to be controversial.
Shock.
Okay, Steve's crying a little bit, but sorry.
I have no input.
Why not?
Well, I mean, he's like top three for sure.
And even top two. Who's the other one?
I think that Pelé is pretty up there, and Maradona pretty up there. And then it has to be Messi. But the game has changed so much that it's difficult to say somebody from like the 80s compared to somebody from now. It's not the same game anymore. Like, you see videos from back then, and like people were like literally playing with steel cleats trying to get you. And now somebody blows on you and you fall and it's a foul. So the sport's
gotten soft. Is what you're saying, Fernando.
I would not say so.
I'll say it.
But you do want the players to have a life. Like, you cannot be like, I remember seeing people breaking legs. And it's like, okay, well, he's done.
Right. Right. So, I mean, we're not trying to sit here and encourage the Roy Keane days, but Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira brought a certain excitement to the game, right?
And Diego Simeone.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. Tugging on David Beckham's hair. People don't forget Simeone. Still thinking about that. Steve, I got to ask you real quick, taking Messi out of the picture, who's your number one Argentinian footballer? Alex, I'm coming to you next. Yeah, I mean, I'm putting you on the spot.
Mine's Juan Riquelme.
Yeah.
Amazing player.
I'm going with the Argentine Jesus, Fabrizio Colaccini.
I'm gonna stick with a very unpopular opinion and go with Carlos Tevez. I think Tevez is underrated, and he's low key a bulldog up front. And I think I've triggered Steve.
No honorable mention. I wanted to throw in Javier Zanetti. That's my honorable
mention. Zanetti. Yes, that is my absolutely.
My honorable mention is Hernan Crespo.
We're just throwing names out there now.
Yeah, now we're just naming Argentinian players.
I needed to put some respect on the name. I couldn't have him go unmentioned.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Carlos Tevez because I can make a decision. That's my two cents. No, Tevez for me was that player that I think we forgot about. He's still playing, right? He's at Boca Juniors. Isn't that crazy?
I think he's unsigned.
Not anymore. He's moved to a different team.
Yeah.
Got it. Going back to the Prem, the real league, the league everyone cares about. Real quick, can we pause? Because I think Steve's texting his girlfriend.
No, I was looking at what team he's. I was looking at what team.
Tell her we say hi. am I correct in my thinking you're a Liverpool fan?
You are correct. Yes.
Why did that happen?
End of podcast. End of show.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye, guys. Sorry. No, I think that like I'm a big video game player, and one of the first soccer video games that I played had like five choices of teams, like one or two from England, like one from Brazil. I don't know why. And like one from Japan or something. It was like a weird game. In Argentina, when I was younger, you could not see football from outside of Argentina. Mm. And once I was able to start watching football from outside, I started like watching like Ajax and Liverpool matches because it's all they showed. So I was like, hey, this is not bad. And then here we are.
Stuck it out. Who's your favorite?
That's an interesting story.
I mean, dude, that's how it works, man. It's how you get exposed.
You're just like a favorite player, like something like that. But like, it's just funny how it was like a video game and the video game only had X amount of options and just we gravitated towards one. That's just funny how that happens.
What game was it? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Was it like the original FIFA, like FIFA International Soccer or something like that?
No. It was before FIFA.
Predating FIFA?
This was like back. I think that I still had a 286, so it wasn't even a Windows computer. So that's how old I am, and that's how old the game was.
That's awesome. I remember like FIFA 95, I think it was. If you got booked or like sent off, you could run away from the ref and prolong the carding. And I used to just run down the tunnel and like turn the game off because I got my keeper sent off or something like the good old days. But yeah, that's awesome, man. What's your favorite Liverpool memories? Like, who's your players over there? Like, you know what I mean?
I'm a big fan of Steven Gerrard, obviously.
Stevie G.
If you ever seen him play, you cannot not be a fan.
You triggered Steve.
Yeah, he's also probably the greatest coach in Scottish history. Like, leading Rangers right now, undefeated. Still haven't lost, have they?
Yeah, they lost in the
Champions League. Is Ben cutting out? I'm having a hard time hearing Ben.
You can't beat Steven Gerrard. He's unlucky to not make.
As a player, I agree. I think Steven Gerrard as a player is like, it's pretty difficult to leave him out of like an all-time like Prem era starting 11.
I mean, Liverpool's always had some greats, and granted, their one Premier League victory has an asterisk next to it because I don't think it counts. You have
of course you do.
Yeah, I gotta throw that in there. They've always had those players, though. You know what I mean? Like, they had Robbie Fowler, who was really dominant. Fernando Torres was, you know, one of the greats. Now even Jordan Henderson kind of lives on that kind of like pipeline of just solid players. I think
you could go down.
I'm not bringing him up. Okay, not going that far. Where do you think they'll end up this year, Fernando? You got any expectations?
Well, I think that if Van Dijk is healthy, and I think that we can make a run for it, top four probably, but it's all up to the defense. I mean, if we Alisson on goal, it's a must, and if we have a solid, maybe not solid, a good defense, we can do some damage.
Or just the defense, right? Yeah. Jordan Henderson was playing center back at one point last year.
I think everybody had a go at center back last year.
Yeah, we
had a rough time with our defense last year.
Yeah.
As a Liverpool fan, are you excited that Fabinho has signed a new long term contract?
Yeah,
just came through.
Yeah, that's solid player.
Yeah.
Like, if we have him and Henderson in the middle, I feel like plays will happen. And then if Firmino on top also, I mean, just get a clean ball up. And
he's versatile too, chances, which is nice. You can put him you can plug him into a few different places. Center back, he plays in center, middle of the park, holding mid. The older I get, the more I enjoy or the more I appreciate a player that is not, you know, limited to just one position. And when he can play a lot of different positions and that just proves a lot of worth. It's kind of like a James Milner. James Milner can kind of play. I mean, he's kind of being like a rotation player now, but James Milner is a very much a, you know, fullback, center midfielder, wide midfielder. He can play a winger at times, like back when he played for like City, even like early Liverpool days. I very much appreciate players like that. And I think Fabinho, although he's getting a little bit up there in age, I believe, I think that his versatility and experience will be an asset to him.
James Milner might be the most underrated player in the history of football.
Honestly, man, he's
been playing for forever. Like, I remember him as a Newcastle player, and I was like, oh, this guy's old. Like, this guy's washed already. That's why we're selling him off. And then he goes on and has like a phenomenal career at Liverpool.
And the best thing. I was going to say the best thing to happen to you is to get sold from Newcastle.
Yeah, that's usually what happens with Newcastle players that go to Liverpool. Wijnaldum.
I think so. I've got, you know, a little bit of a take on Jurgen Klopp. I like to refer to him as our favorite Bond villain because he does look like a James Bond villain. I think he is either going to be sitting top of the table come Christmas, or he's going to be unemployed by Christmas. I think Liverpool fans were a little frustrated by the turnaround coming out of such a good year. And I think he's good enough to take them there. Like, the fact that they're in Europe speaks in volumes, but if they're not positioned to compete, I just think the Liverpool fans are going to give him a hard time. And I think the English press are going to eat him up, because he was having some moments, you know, mid to late in the season where he was kind of getting into it with the press, and I could see that causing issues. And I also think, you know, Liverpool's got to be sitting there chomping at the bit for like someone like Steven Gerrard, who's in such good form and could bring him back in to coach. You know what I mean? It might be mutual, but I just, part of me thinks he's got something to kind of prove coming off of last year.
Yeah. There's also the fact that, you know, whenever you come out of a super good year, like, expectations go up, other teams start looking at you like, oh, okay, so this is how it is. So I feel like it's different. And when you have some change in the lineup and it's not the same team, it gets rough. I mean, of course, you have teams that can do it and they do it all the time. But after the run that we had, I feel like having a year that wasn't amazing, it's understandable. But then again, I'm just a fan, so what do I know?
Well, I think to your point, though, right, like, or to what we were talking about earlier, Liverpool were like injury riddled all last year. Like,
oh yeah,
I don't even think you can blame Klopp. I just think the fans are ruthless, and Anfield is such a unique environment.
It was a crisis. With.
Right. He was pretty much putting his boots on himself. You're going to see Klopp coming on as like the 12th man. Just to play left back for 15 minutes there.
Shoot, the 11th man, just to make it 11.
Yeah, I know. Him and Derby County, right, Steve? I don't know, though. I just think while they might be unfair expectations, I just think he created a level of expectations. And it's kind of bittersweet, right? Because you know he never got the full Anfield experience of winning because COVID really wrapped that season up for him. So it's, I'm sure he has something to prove for himself as well coming into the year. Steve, what do you think of Liverpool's odds this year?
I'd probably side with Fur on that one. Top four, I don't see there to be a reason why they won't be top four. As long as they can avoid another crisis, injury crisis like they did last season. There's no breakups in the season due to COVID things happening. Van Dijk and Joe Gomez, if they can keep – I'm sorry, not Joe Gomez. Joel Matip. As long as those two center backs can keep it together, keep fit, I don't see there to be a reason why they shouldn't be able to challenge for top four. I really don't. Will they win it? I'm not certain. I think it'll either be City, Liverpool, or Chelsea. As much as I don't want Chelsea to win, I do think it'll be one of them.
Yeah, I think, replacing Wijnaldum is probably your biggest thing that you have to do before the start of the season. I mean, you got Henderson, Thiago, and Fabinho. You know, it's a pretty solid midfield right there, as you were talking about. But I think at least two of them are on the other side of 30, you know, keeping them fit the entire time, you know, for the entire season. We saw what happens when that doesn't happen. The depth doesn't seem to be there for you guys. So that'll be the biggest key to you guys moving forward. And of course, Man City is, you know, I think probably odds on favorite still, even without a true out and out striker right now. You know, they got 1500 center attacking midfielders that could play the role. But I think they're in a little bit of, you know, they're in the press and there's a lot of news swirling around them about signings that they may have coming in or coming out, things like that. So that might, you know, hinder them a little bit at the beginning of the season, but after that, you know that they're going to come back. So capitalizing on a good, quick, early start for Liverpool, I think is the biggest thing for you guys. If you really want to challenge for top one, top two, but like you said, I think, you know, always aiming for Europe is, it's got to be Liverpool's aim at least.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Not even Europe. I would say like Champions League.
Champions League for sure. I mean, Europe is a failure.
Yeah.
I think we saw that in the late push. You know what I mean? Liverpool does have one of those fan bases that gets down on you for not overperforming with one win, much like England's national team.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I think it's Chelsea's year. And as a Man United fan, it's more painful for me than it is Steve. Not to one-up you, Steve. But I do think Thomas Tuchel's got something good going on. Hasn't spent any money. He's managed to somehow find a spot for Pulisic at right back, like a wing back position.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll see him there forever, but yeah, they're trying him out.
It seems, I mean, they've got a good thing working for them. And I think, yeah, I think top three for Liverpool is realistic. Maybe a run in Champions League as well. I got to say, one of my biggest regrets in knowing you for this long is I never took a sip of your teas.
So I was Fernando thinking the same
always
thing.
Has his tea 24/7. And I'm just always looking at it thinking, like, I wonder what that tastes like. And never once did I say, Fernando, I'm taking a sip of this.
So I have to say, I have offered mate to everybody. But people look at it and they're like, ooh, it looks gross. And there you go.
That was not my remembrance of the situation with the tea, Fernando. I actually was looking at it and was just like, I should just take a sip and not tell him.
I've heard it's really bitter.
Or ask.
No.
Just take it. It is not necessarily bitter if you make it right.
Mm.
If it's bitter, it's because you burned the leaves of the mate. I guess I'm going to have to come over and just make you one.
Yeah. I was about to say, I was like, we're going to
sell this. Good.
Yeah. I was like,
I'll drop my address in the in the chat. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. You do not have to quarantine for 2 weeks when you come visit me.
I was going to say, there is no quarantine on the way back to the States. So
of course that, not yet. You better knock on wood, my friend.
Maybe.
Right.
That's me knocking on wood for you. All right, yeah. Fernando, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. We really appreciate it, my man. Love hearing different people's stories with the game. It's always good to see a friendly face again. Nice to see that you're doing well. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experiences with the Olympics. Fellas, anything you want to add?
Fer, let's get together soon, eh?
Canadian?
Canadian Steve. My only last question. Because you're over there for the Paralympics, you mentioned, are you going to be able to watch the Premier League over there? Is it going to be at like 3 a.m, 3 days in advance for you or something?
Dude, technically, you're in the future.
Right.
Like, we're talking to someone in the future right now, guys.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
Yes. When we were trying to set this up, I was like, ooh, 8 p.m. Like, I don't know. What time is that for me? Like, oh, so it's the next morning at like 9. Like, okay. 9 a.m. I can do 9 a.m. Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, for the premiere, I don't know.
I guess it'll be at like 7 o'clock at night then, if it's like a 6 a.m. game for us or something like that, because it's basically 13 hours ahead of Eastern time. So
I'm 8 hours. I'm 8 hours ahead nice. Of Europe. So
okay.
If it's like a late game.
Oh yeah.
Maybe. But when the event is going, I have to get up at like 5 a.m. So
yeah.
And we start working at like 6. So
Steve, are you paying attention? So Steve goes to Chicago and doesn't know what day it is. This dude's in a different country and a different thing. Steve, take notes, man. Like, this guy's got it down.
Well, I've been doing this for over 10 years, dealing with time zones and stuff. So I you get used to it.
Yeah, that was a day thing for me. I'll learn. I'm a quick learner.
Steve goes one time zone away and like the world is like lost.
An hour. He's like, guys, it's next Thursday, right? No. That's great.
I just think of the Robin Williams meme of like, you know, she's like, what year is it? Who's that?
You were in Minneapolis, right? Not Chicago.
I was Minneapolis. It was Minneapolis, yeah.
Land of 1,000 lakes and no clocks, apparently.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, Fer, it's been a pleasure, my man. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for coming on, and we look forward to hearing from you throughout the season.
Awesome. Thank you for having me, guys.
All right, great conversation there with Fernando. Great to get a look inside of what's going on at the Olympics right now, as well as the state of Argentinian football and, unfortunately, Liverpool as well. I guess we had to talk about that. But let's get back to the Premier League. All right, Ben, so Gary Neville, he says that Harry Kane's on a collision course right now with Daniel Levy at Tottenham, suggesting something has gone totally wrong behind the scenes, and that's why Harry Kane hasn't shown up for work for, what, the past 2-3 days now. Daily Mail, of all places in England, says that Kane actually went on holiday and he's on quarantine right now. So that might explain a few things why he hasn't shown up. But ESPN is reporting that Kane is going to be back this week. My thoughts are, though, that this is just not looking good if you're a Tottenham fan. Do you think he's off to Man City for £100 million?
I think he's at Mallorca. He's just gone clubbing.
He's still partying.
It's just like, yo, I got to live up this finals. He's come out of the grieving period. Nah, man, he said he's going back on Monday. He's taking some PTO. Well, I think he's taking his time. And I think the media is like, let's make a meal of it because there's nothing else to really chat about.
English media.
I mean, well, Steve, we don't need to bring in different, countries and stuff.
I did hear that as well, that he's going back on Monday. He said, I read that he was going back on Monday because the situation is getting blown out of proportion.
Interesting. He's on holiday.
Yeah, I think he was in Manchester looking
I'm
at
in
houses.
Mallorca. or that. I'm just imagining the next WWE mashup, Daniel Levy versus Harry Kane.
I'm telling you, I don't think City are looking for a standalone striker. I don't think he's the one either. I don't think he fits their kind of their tactics right now.
He's not
quick enough. Grealish, man. Right. They want Grealish. They want someone that can play fast on the break. They don't really need that aerial threat. They keep the ball on the ground. Grealish is a weird addition to a very stacked Man City midfield for me anyway, but – yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere. I think it's just drama. I think he'll be there till January.
I think he's going. There's no way.
Score some goals, man.
There's no way you make all that. You know what? That would actually be a really Tottenham thing to happen. He makes all this fuss and then thinks like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't really mean to do that. And they just stay at Tottenham and they just pretend like nothing happened. And then Tottenham still do not well this season.
Well, I don't think he did himself any favors, right? Like, his stock's gone down a little bit after Euros. He has proven that he needs a specific style of play to kind of be a supporting cast member in a successful club. I'm not saying he's not good. I just don't think he's £100 million good, right? And at one point, we're talking about £150 million. Like, his stock dropped £50 million.
That's what Daniel Levy will not budge off of. He's like, yeah. 150, not accepting anything less than that.
Yeah. What do you guys think of Jack Grealish? I mean, his girlfriend right now says that he's getting 200 death threats a day. I saw a video on Twitter of some fans coming up to him, some Villa fans coming up to him saying, like, why would you want to go to a club that, like, has no history? Like, why would you do this to us, basically, kind of deal. So they're definitely heavily coercing him to try and stay at Aston Villa, I guess is the most polite way of putting that. But do you think he's off?
Did they just rebuff his – if I'm correct, you think he makes like 125K a week at Villa. I can only imagine that City would be offering easily double. I think it's 125. I don't know. Yeah, I don't have the answer.
125,000 pound a week contract. Yep.
Is he worth it? You know what I mean? Like, he came off the bench for England. He's good. He's exciting to watch play, but like, has he earned that? I don't know, man. There's a lot of hype around him. I just don't know that I'm sold on hype.
The hype is based off of
the fact he didn't play.
No, I've like, got my own opinions, so I don't know if I want to share them.
Well, it's podcast. That's what you're supposed to do.
The entire point of having a podcast, Steve.
I think because he's white and he's English.
Whoa!
I think the hype is blown way out of proportion.
So, do you think it's the haircut? It's like, you think it's the second coming of David Beckham?
It's like a Jack Wilshere all over again. He's the next prodigy. He's the next savior of English football. And I just think that it gets way hyped on him versus
Sterling.
That's my opinion.
That's okay.
That's what I think. I genuinely think. I'm of the same vein, Ben. I'm like, is he worth it? I don't really know if he's worth it.
I don't think so either. I don't agree with your take. I see how you got there. I don't think that's like in complete left field. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to sit there and be like, that's not an unwarranted take. I think there's an element of like, is he the next number seven for England going on? That I think has a little bit of an edge to it as well. But dude, if he played in Euros, he would probably be worth less money right now. You know what I mean? Like, him being demanded by fans to come on the field, not getting the minutes, is really what drove his worth up to me. Yeah, and I think that's why you're seeing this. And he's also the best player on not a great team.
Yeah. It's the law of supply and demand. He's in demand right now and there's only one of him. So,
and he can't screw it up.
Yeah. When I see these players like a Jack Grealish, or even another recent one is like a James Maddison, or Yuri Tielemans from Leicester, like these players are playing for these teams and are getting offers from, you know, like Man United's and like other teams that are established in people's psyches as like the teams that you want to play for, the upper echelons of football. But like, then you look at the reality of what's been going on, and like football has changed since those times that those benchmarks have been set. And although, yes, those clubs still command those types of money, but you look at like successes and, you know, Leicester's been consistent. Leicester's been doing very solid in these last, you know, 5-6 seasons. Villa had a really good season. There's been a shift in who is becoming more of like, you know, not juggernauts. That's not the term I want to use, but like more, you know, Villa and Leicester have upped their stock in terms of footballing pedigree over these. They've made a case for themselves. And I wonder if when these players receive these offers from these other clubs, like James Maddison, you know, to go into Arsenal, I think he had an offer from Arsenal recently and some other Premier League club. Like, if I'm James Maddison, I'm thinking, I wonder if he's thinking like, why would I want to go to Arsenal?
Yeah.
Why would I want to go to Arsenal right now?
Sinking ship.
Yeah, it's a sinking ship. Yes, it's Arsenal. People think of the Invincibles. People think of like, you know, the Arsenal that James Maddison also would know growing up. That's not the Arsenal now.
Right.
Like Leicester is now. Look at what Leicester's doing. Look at what you're doing with Leicester. I don't know. But then like the money comes, there's a bunch of variables that come into play. I understand that. But I genuinely think, I wonder if these players think when they get these offers from these big six clubs.
Yeah. There's almost no loyalty to a fan. I mean, just imagine what Jack Grealish could be to Aston Villa if they even
exactly
have any inkling of success with anything. They win an FA Cup, something like that, and he's on that team. You know, immortalized,
time to retire
forever. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
What do you think? Is he worth it, Alex?
I don't think he's worth the 100 million. I did say before the Euros, I remember saying that I think he's the best player to put on an England shirt in a long, long time, and I stand by that. I think he is, like you said, he's an exciting player, and he's somebody that brings something totally different, especially to an England team that is typically pretty bread and butter boring. 100 million pounds, you know, you're starting to talk like silly kind of money. And you're talking at a time too when there's COVID, like,
yeah, especially
all the money issues with all these clubs. Like, that's not what you were going to talk about. Yeah. And I was just about to bring up how Inter Milan now wants, they've rebuffed this like 75 million pound bid for Lukaku. Or I think it was even 100 million pounds. And now they want 120 million euros or $142 million for a player. You know, like,
I'm available.
I could probably score one or two goals. You know,
if you let me take set pieces, I'm in.
Yeah. So I think it's just, you know,
it's all made up anyway. It's the thing is, though, is that value has to do with how many jerseys you'll sell. And I think that weighs in on it as well. But he's good. It's just Aston Villa aren't great. And I think Aston Villa are what Everton were like 10 years ago. Like, they're going to be sixth place fighting to stay in Europe in some kind of way, shape, or form.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I do. Everton's been right. I forgot. How could I be so silly? I mean, I know they pitted out last season, but like they had a solid showing. I think they were top of the Prem for a sec with Carlo Ancelotti and James Rodriguez. Yeah. I think that they were top, and they were doing.
Yeah, but where'd they finish?
I understand that, but like,
I mean, right now Arsenal's top of the Premier League. Like, it's alphabetical until
I'm saying that. Like, the power is shifting hands, and I think that these teams that are normally not the top six, I think the top six is not as definitive as it used to be. I think it's a lot more fluid.
I agree. I think that started when Sir Alex kind of stepped down. You know what I mean? Like, that's the time where those teams all started to change. Mm-hmm. United were still relevant, but all of those teams started to change where they were, and you saw that. That movement, and it's honestly, it makes the league that much better when you can have that kind of leeway. You know what I mean?
For sure, for sure. When they don't have a definitive top six, I definitely agree. I just wonder, like, if you can forecast these trends and forecast the power shift in clubs, you can forecast like, I'd be beneficial, or to me if I stayed at Villa or if I stayed at Leicester. You know,
especially going to teams like Arsenal. Like, I just, it just seems like a Arsenal this Tottenham. Way, like, yeah.
Aston Villa only placed one place above Newcastle United.
That's what I'm saying. The trash.
It might have been 10 points, but it was one place above Newcastle United.
You're telling me Steve Bruce is in the mix for Jack Grealish?
Steve Bruce has yet to sign any player, so.
People hate Steve Bruce, like in the clubhouse.
Oh, I don't know why.
Players hate him. You know what I'm saying? Hey, Alex, can I just register a complaint?
Yeah.
Steve has asserted his dominance all throughout this podcast in a nonverbal way by displaying a very large cheetah in the background, and I feel threatened. I feel like less of a man because I don't have that behind me. So to give you guys like a visual, it is a cheetah the size of a T-Rex. I don't know how else to describe it.
And it's majestic tapestry behind
it's
me.
Beautiful. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Steve's done some redecorating.
On record here that Steve is making me feel like less of a human.
Ben, before we wrap this up, looks like Messi Lingard might get another shot at Man United. Looks like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wants to give him a chance again. What do you think of that?
I think he's driving up his price to sell him.
Oh, he'll be off to Man City.
I could see that. I could see him going to any of those clubs.
Carlos Tevez Boulevard all the way to Man City.
Right. I think I hope they play him. I think he's earned a shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like just looking at the depth of that team, is he gonna start over like Amad Diallo? I don't know where he fits. Mm-hmm. You don't play him over Rashford. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how he pans out. I'm excited for that one though.
I'll link him up with Steve Bruce. Maybe we can get a long spell going on or something.
Take a right at Peter Schmeichel Lane and a left at Carlos Tevez Boulevard.
It's a Man City company card at Debenhams, right?
Right.
Did you guys see the big changes coming for VAR?
Did.
Yeah. I did see the changes. I don't know what they are.
I saw it at SwiftKickspod.com. SwiftKickspod.com.
/cancel Steve. So the big changes, Steve, let me tell you, there's two big ones coming. Basically, PKs are going to be moved back into the hands of the officials to make the decision. So it sounds like most of last year, they had 20 more PKs than like any other year or something like that last year.
Basically,
it's because if there was contact, they were given the PK despite what the impact of the contact was. So now they're giving the referee the decision-making again to be like, hey, yes, there was contact. Yes, he accidentally flicked his nose. No, it didn't impact the way the play turned out. So you should still see kind of an uptick to prior years, but it'll be down from last year. It'll be less soft PKs is what some of the refs were saying. The other big change that's coming is with offsides, and it's not necessarily as big, in that they're going to continue to give the strikers the benefit of the doubt that they're onside and let VAR call it back. But instead of using a one pixel lens to make the decision if they're offsides or not, so where you could see like
somebody's elbow,
player's toenail is offsides or something like that, getting it called back, they're just going to use the flat line from a broad view, which should I think that's going to create more goals, but it should let the game play a little more freely and it won't be as long of a review. So it won't take as long to do that. So it was a big change of the VAR
there. I was imagining you were saying for a sec when you mentioned offsides, and with the change with offsides, they've scrapped it. Prepare for
no offsides. Cherry picking is back.
Season, boys.
Yeah.
All these 40-year-old players come back. They're like, whoa, wait. I can stand next to the goal.
Alan Shearer is starting up top for Newcastle.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Finish it. That's cool. All right, guys. It's been another episode. We did finally come up with a hashtag for Alex. But first, I think, Alex, we need to know, where are Newcastle finishing this year?
16th.
You don't think they're getting relegated?
No.
I think Steve Bruce, you think Steve Bruce is the man for the job?
No, but he will be. For eternity.
Is he the man for the job? No, but he will be.
I don't understand. Like,
I was reading something where basically he has a 3-year contract and he re-signs for 3 years every year.
Hot take: he's gonna place 12th.
I would be
Newcastle's place in 12th.
Bold.
Yeah, super bold. Almost as bold as his cheetah.
We've Almost. Gone over this, Steve. That's you can't do that anymore. It's really hurting my feelings. I feel yeah, let's hashtag cancel Steve Spagnuolo. All right, guys, the Swift Kicks podcast, your favorite podcast or not, who cares? We really appreciate that you listen. Make sure you tell a friend about us. And if you haven't told a friend who's told a friend, tell that friend to tell a friend. Mm-hmm. And we'll go from there. So,
and then find another friend of theirs and then tell them about SwiftKicksPod.com.
Yeah.
Add it to your favorites. Make it your homepage, actually, of your web browser.
Just leave it open in the background. Have it be one of those like thousands tabs that you have to close out.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You're not going to close all the rest of those out anyway. What's adding one more? It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
We'll add a Spotify playlist to the background. It'll just be ambient noise.
What's a Spotify? Is that a rare type of insect that flies?
It's what you do when you go on safari.
Yeah. We see what you did there. All right, guys. SwiftKickPod.com. Thank you. Peace out.